This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is David Gardenstein-Ross, who is the director of the Center for the Study of Terrorist Radicalization at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies here in Washington. He's also the author of the forthcoming book due out this fall entitled Why Al-Qaeda is Winning. He's also written recently for Foreign Policy magazine in an article entitled Osama's Oil Obsession, explaining how part of Al-Qaeda's major strategy in attacking the United States and our allies is to go after oil facilities. And David, it's always great to have you with us.
Likewise, Greg. Always good to join you.
Thank you, sir. We have in this piece that you wrote a pretty detailed explanation of a story I think most folks have probably forgotten about, and that's when Al-Qaeda tried to infiltrate a major oil facility in Saudi Arabia. There was a major firefight. Ultimately, the Saudis were able to defend the facility. But as you've dug into this, it appears that the threat was even greater than we were led to believe at the time. First of all, really happened back in 2005 when Al-Qaeda tried to go after this major facility in Saudi Arabia?
This is the Abqaiq facility, which is a critical facility in Saudi Arabia because about two-thirds of Saudi oil is processed through this facility. Now, when this attack occurred, it was in February of 2006. You had individuals who were in Aramco uniforms and driving Aramco vehicles, Aramco being the state-owned oil company, who were able to get inside the first of three perimeter fences before they were fired on by Saudi security. According to Saudi sources, their vehicle then blew up. The reason why this is of concern is, first of all, it seems that they were able to breach further inside the facility than the official story allowed in the immediate aftermath. The second thing is, where did they get those vehicles? Where did they get those uniforms? It seems that they had either inside assistance or else they were able to procure the uniforms, the vehicles from the black market. Neither scenario gives us reason for concern. And we know the United States was concerned enough after this incident occurred, that they worked with Saudi Arabia to try to establish a 35,000 member strong specialized security force inside the kingdom that was specifically designed to protect the oil supply.
One of the things, of course, that folks have said lately, especially with the death of bin Laden, is that Al-Qaeda can't do anymore what it would like to do. They couldn't pull off a 9/11 again. What do we know about their subsequent attempts to attack either this or other oil facilities, and what type of capability they actually have?
Well, we have to divide this into two different categories. One is their capability of attacking oil facilities and what they've tried to do there. The second one is the actual question that some have raised, which is Al-Qaeda's ability to carry out another 9/11 or to carry out another large-scale strike. In terms of attacks on oil, Saudi Arabian oil really is the critical oil to be attacked, the critical oil supply, because Saudi Arabia produces 10 million barrels of oil a day. It is critical to the world economy. It's the only country that can maintain a swing reserve of 1.5 million barrels. That is, they can up their production by 1.5 million barrels in order to stabilize world oil prices. And their production is centralized around a few limited hubs, which means that if you could do significant damage to one of these hubs, you could perhaps take out millions of barrels of oil per day from the world market, which would be devastating for the world economy. As to their capabilities to carry out another major 9/11-style strike, this organization still has capabilities. If you look back to October of last year, there was a large-scale plot afoot to carry out multiple Mumbai-style attacks in Europe. Mumbai was a terrorist attack which occurred back in November of 2008, when you had a number of jihadis descend upon Mumbai in an urban warfare-style attack, seizing hotels and other targets, taking hostages, and engaging in a running firefight with authorities for more than 72 hours. It completely shut down that major city for that length of time. And they wanted to replicate something similar in Europe. This plot was hatched in the tribal areas of Pakistan. And you know, this indicates a group that is still capable, but you know, attacking the oil supply, that's a way of attacking the economy. In many other ways, Al-Qaeda also wants to attack the economy much more than just carry out sheer carnage on the scale of 9/11. And so something like two recent plots we saw, the Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab underpants plot that occurred on Christmas Day of 2009, and then in October of last year, this plot in which bombs hidden in ink cartridges were placed on board UPS and FedEx planes. Both of these are indicative of a new style of warfare, which Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, one of the affiliates of the organization, has described as the strategy of 1,000 cuts. That is, they want to carry out smaller but more frequent attacks with the explicit purpose of increasing our security costs. This is a means of undertaking economic warfare, even if you don't carry out something along the scale of a 9/11. And right now, our systems, frankly, aren't well designed to deal with this particular strategy.
Going back to the oil threat for a moment, David, you mentioned that we've undergone significant security upgrades in cooperation with the Saudis, and that is the largest threat. What about with other nations that we do business with in the region and that obviously rely tremendously on oil for their own economic survival?
Well, a number of them have experienced attacks on the oil supply. Most prominent is Iraq, by far. You had, between the beginning of the Iraq War and mid-2008, no less than 450 unique attacks against the supply of oil in Iraq. Most of these have been pipeline attacks. Now, the thing about a pipeline attack is it can take a lot of oil off the market for a short time. For example, some coordinated attacks in Nigeria by a group called the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta. It's not a jihadi group. It's a nationalist terrorist group with interests local to Nigeria. But it was able to take about 200,000 barrels off the market in a period of just a few days. Now, the thing about pipeline attacks, though, is they can be repaired rather quickly. They're disruptive attacks. They're not catastrophic attacks. And likewise, the attacks in Iraq have been disruptive attacks that suppressed the supply of oil for quite some time. It took till last year, I believe, for Iraq to increase its oil production back to 2.5 million barrels per day. In the last few years of Saddam Hussein's regime, it was at 2.3 million per day. So these constant attacks by insurgent groups on the various means of getting oil to market were able to hurt Iraq's economy by depressing its ability to produce oil. But in general, disruptive attacks will have a short-term impact on the market. They will increase the cost of securing the oil supply, but they're not something which can fundamentally change geopolitics the way that a major catastrophic strike on one of the hubs of Saudi production could do.
Last 30 seconds here, David. You also mentioned in your piece that in late 2005, Ayman al-Zawahiri, who is soon to be the head figure at al-Qaeda, released a video suggesting that al-Qaeda needs to focus their attacks on the stolen oil of the Muslims. So as this group is reeling to some extent and reorganizing, how prominent do you expect attacks on oil to be as he assumes command?
Well, it's hard to say. First of all, we don't know that he's going to assume command. One thing we should factor in when we discuss who's going to lead al-Qaeda is how much we don't know. Second thing I would say is I actually expect that affiliates will start taking the lead over the next couple of years, that central leadership will recede to the background and try to regroup and really come to the fore once they feel that they've been able to consolidate themselves. So I think that you'll see in the next couple of years people saying al-Qaeda is dead because we see the affiliates front and center. But we've made that mistake before. We made that mistake circa 2002 to 2003, and we shouldn't make it again.
Very interesting. David, thank you so much for being with us, as always.
My pleasure.
David Gardenstein-Ross is the director of the Center for the Study of Terrorist Radicalization at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. His forthcoming book, due out this fall, is Why Al-Qaeda is Winning, and he is also the author of a piece appearing in Foreign Policy magazine on Osama's oil obsession. The date of that is May 23rd. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.